woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay?
Talking again with the Chinese, we're doing all that stuff, and so just when you think we're out, they keep telling you we're sort of back in, and the market likes that, and then I, for one, I'm getting somewhat tired of this in and out thing, but anyway, that's what that is. Kevin, how are you, bud?
Man, you just clipped Godfather 3 and Clockwork Orange all in one sentence.
Yeah, yeah. So,
you know, you just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in, and then a little of the old in and out.
That's right. The old in and out, as they used to say. It feels like you are getting the old in and out, doesn't it? we'll just leave that one alone.
We will not develop that theme any further.
No, the... I saw yesterday another one of our generation is no longer, Kevin. Doris Day was a little bit before us, but we knew her growing up. And yesterday I saw Tim Conway, and then they were talking about the Emmys for some show that I never watched. Wait a minute. Tim Conway was Ensign Parker, right?
Oh, Ensign Parker all the way to Dorf.
Yeah, but Ensign Parker was the... McHale's Navy, what a great show.
That actually still finds its way on some of the cable stations and comes on antenna TV or something like that.
So as you
cruise around, you know, on a sleepless night and you start bouncing around the high numbered channels, you probably find Ensign Parker somewhere.
Well, and once in a while, on the weekend, odds. I don't know, for some reason I can find that stuff on her cable better than mine, but I was actually watching Combat last week, and wow. Lieutenant Hanley was in some town, and he was the only American in there, and the Germans had all the buildings, and they're looking for him, and he's kind of looking for them, and I think it was Tuesday night was the best TV night when you were a Ute. Did you say Ute? I think it was Combat.
What? What was that word?
Yeah. I think it was Combat, McHale's Navy, and Wacky Ship in the Army, all right in a row.
Not bad.
Yeah, was
it? Yeah, that's quite a lineup.
Combat was a serious show.
Yeah, I know.
And
yeah, it was.
Can you name the guys?
I can remember. I can't name the characters. I remember that Vic Morrow was the star.
Yep. And then there was Lieutenant Hanley and Vic Morrow. He was a sergeant, and then. Had a real big guy, little general, carried the big, huge gun, because nobody else could carry it. And then the little guy, the little kind of French-looking guy, Cage, was the guy was always on point, because he was the small, fast guy. And Kirby was kind of in the middle. And then everybody else got killed, right? Those guys made it.
Yeah, everybody else was cannon fodder.
Yeah. But that's kind of the way. It's like Star Trek. The guys in the red shirts that do so hot.
Right, yeah. Yeah, you better have your name on the marquee. You're not lasting.
No, you're not lasting. You're something. You're the one guy to cling on decided to off. But Kevin, this is where exactly you don't even know which direction to look for the news these days. We've got
sure you do. You turn on the you got to watch the news that I watch every morning.
No, no, I'm talking about...
Get up, turn on MLB channel and watch Quick Pitch and see what happened the night before.
Well, that's the truth. Kyle Hendricks.
It's much easier on the psyche.
Kyle Hendricks, three hits, huh? And then the fourth one was a line drive. We're talking about a guy who's focused. There's a guy who's just continually improving the game mentally his entire career. Just a smart guy, keep studying. Not that he has no talent, he sure does. I mean, not many people can throw the ball 89 miles an hour or 90, much less 95, but he seems to be getting better every year, which is interesting. Actually, John Lester.
He really is, and it's fun to see that there is still room for a pitcher rather than a thrower in baseball. But, you know, you could say the same thing about John Lester, that in his latter years, he relies a lot more on how to pitch rather than how hard to throw. So, yeah, it is fun to watch those guys work. It becomes a craft rather than all an ability, and I really enjoy watching a guy like that pitch.
Well, since you've decided the game has gone with the everybody in the bullpen just comes in and basically has one pitch in a million miles an hour. It really must be quite a face Hendricks three times and then face a guy like that's got to be a difference in your game. I mean, it's a real change your next time up.
Oh yeah, when a guy comes in as a flamethrower, sure.
Yeah, it's a well. When I met
after you've been watching, soft toss and precision, then yeah, you go on to a flamethrower, and it's like, okay, you know, I got to dial it back up. Can I or not? Well, and major league hitters can.
Well, major league hitters are not so sure there's any harder to do in sports, to be honest with you, as a hit of baseball. But
And if anybody doubts that, just go over to a fast pitch batting cage and stand in there and see what happens, because that isn't even close to major league pitching, and yet it's still difficult.
Oh, yeah, yeah. When I meant which way to look for the news, Kevin, do we look toward China, which obviously has been driving the market, and the... I'm gonna say, you know, without getting crazy politics, Washington has milked this thing. I mean, this negotiation could have been done with a lot more transparency and with a lot less up and down in the market, which makes me think people are taking advantage of it. I mean, I've never in this business. I knew when people were correct. I knew when crowds, when you could hear every trade, and I knew right when there was a spot where you didn't sort of hear one, and your ears immediately went up, like, what happened over there? And you'd find out something traded, and everybody would be bitching at somebody. You got a sense to it. I haven't been on the floor in a long time, but I think I still retain the sense to it, and this is huge market move with the markets that we have right now, with no standing orders, no anything. All of a sudden, people get, the only time you make a sale sometimes, it seems, is when it's bid right above where you sold it, and you combine the markets that are exclusive, not inclusive. So there's only a few players, and then you end up, where you get these huge moves. I mean, the move Friday, Monday, and Tuesday is pretty dramatic. I mean, you talk about Friday, we're up. We're down 45 S&P points, which is a huge day. It's 2%. We finish up 15, so we're talking about a 60-point move. Monday, we're down 85 all day. We finished down like 77. I mean, I'm off by one or two, but at that level, it really doesn't matter. Then yesterday, we come back, we're up 40, 42 the whole day, and we finished up like 37, which is almost exactly half. Now today, we're down 675. It looks like we maybe came back a little too much yesterday. Now, we've got the Chinese, where we pushed it off 2 weeks again. We're going to talk at 2 weeks in G20, and even though they screwed us, they changed the deal, and they're a bunch of idiots, and we got to change it. They've been screwing us for years. By the way, Obama was an idiot. By the way, Bush was an idiot. By the way, Clinton was an idiot. All this stuff, I'm the only guy who's going to save everything. And yet we're getting nowhere. It doesn't appear on the thing. And I'd say, when we don't have the Trans-Pacific thing to fall back on, because we got rid of that. And now we got rid of this. We booted... We extracted ourselves from the Iran situation. Whether we should have or shouldn't have, whether it was a good deal, bad deal, I mean, the people who didn't read it, like me, all you do is give the opinion of the side you're on, or since I'm in the middle, I have no opinion. But now we're out. Our allies tell us it was a bad idea. And here we are 2 years later, and things are escalating over there. I don't know if it means we should have stayed in, if it means this was something we should have been planning on. I don't know what the deal is. I know I looked at the thing yesterday. I think we got four or five aircraft carriers that are even ready to go anywhere. We got one of them sitting in the Persian Gulf, which to me looks totally surrounded. Which I don't know if I'd want to be that captain. And what are we doing? What's our end game over there? Do we want to start a war? Do we not want to start a war? I mean, we managed to deal with the Russians for... I remember, Kevin, when I was younger, there was all kinds of people who just wanted, let's fight them. We should have kicked their ass after World War II. There's always been chicken hawks in this country, all over the place. I mean, you surely remember them in the Vietnam era. Guys that had no chance of ever being in a hedgerow with a gun in their hand were the most, you know, toughest guys on earth. Were the people who actually went, never talk like that. Now, all of a sudden, I mean, what are we doing over there? I mean, do we have an end game in all these places? Now, if Turkey all of a sudden hooks up with Russia and Iran, I think we got a problem. At least geographically, we got a problem. I mean, what are we doing? Do we have an end game in all these places? I think the answer is, I sure hope I'm wrong. I don't know. But you know what? It's affecting...
Well, what I would... You know, I have to give that some thought in that context that you're asking, because I do think Pompeo's a pretty smart guy.
I think he is, too.
So I have... You know, I get a little comfort out of that, but the real question is: Are we dealing with half a dozen situations, or are we dealing with a grand scheme of things? And I don't know what to tell you the answer is, because it isn't that hard to look at each individual situation and try and figure out what the posture is, whether it's negotiating posture, whether it's you know, you can pick one. It doesn't matter. But you know, you can sort of see how each side actually is trying to play its hand, and that's fine for, you know, for what it is. You can sort of see what the Chinese are doing in the negotiations. You can see what the U.S. is trying to do in for its part. And make a certain amount of sense out of it, but the question is there a larger theme going on here? And I don't know what the answer to that is. It could be no. It could be, I don't know. I have to think about it and see if I'm seeing any recurring themes in there.
I think
that would make a good topic for study between semesters.
Well, yeah, all this stuff is a good topic for study. I just wonder if anybody's studying them. The thing that really, really makes me very...
I don't doubt that. Whether you have any confidence in the president or not, there are some people around him who are very good, and there are others around him who are just political hacks. So you have to sift through it. But like I said, I don't think Pompeo, for example, is anything close to non-serious. That he's, you know, he's a smart guy who knows who understands policy and understands a longer game.
I get this a little bit, Kevin, really from the when this guy Trump, when he went to talk to President Z, or one of the guys he went to talk to, was it Putin or something? And I somehow or another, one of the listeners, by the way, whoever it was, thank you, lobs me this article about John Kennedy's first summit with Nikita Khrushchev, and how John Kennedy was you know, arguably one of the most brilliant guys we ever saw in politics here. I mean, he was in the war, he was an author, he was everything, and he learned a lot from his father, good and bad. He learned what to do and what not to do. I think he learned more what not to do. But the fact is, that's education as well, right? I mean, but he went to this summit with the idea that he was always able to get along personally with just about anybody. He had this incredible personality. The most Irish people feel that way. I know I'm half Irish, and by his own admission, he went to the summit and he got his ass kicked because Khrushchev didn't give a rat's behind what his personality was, didn't want to like him, didn't care. He just had his agenda, and that was it. And Kennedy's his idea that somehow if they personally got along okay, that it would melt the ice a little bit. And he admitted himself, it was an absolute... it wasn't like he gave away the store. He just said, I didn't get anywhere. It was no point of going. Because, I mean, I was not prepared for how hard line they were, and I thought I could soften it on a personal level, and I couldn't. And he, I'm going to say, in my mind, is a lot more talented than Trump. Now, what I see in these other people, and it makes me very dangerous, Putin's economy is up somebody's ass. Okay, the only thing keeping him going is hard line on his own people, and the fact that he's able to talk people into other people are your enemies, and they're the reason for our problem. I mean, if the U.S. didn't have sanctions on him, if this didn't happen, so he's got people almost on a semi-war footing to keep his own behind in power. The guys in Iran must know that, as Fari says, 75% of the people in Iran want him the hell out of there. Okay, they would rather have a secular government. They would rather be regular people and being under the thumb of these guys and get rid of the gulags and the other stuff, whatever they call them over there. So what keeps them in power? Other people are trying to screw us. And Turkey, as soon as we turned on this guy, same way. So I would have no idea necessarily, Kevin. I mean, I think I'm pretty bright in some areas, but I don't even know who would get around me to tell me how to deal with people like that. I don't know how you deal with them, because conflict is part of what they want. What I'm saying, dude, this is incredibly tricky. This isn't just, we've got aircraft carriers, they don't, we'll kick their ass if they don't. It's way beyond that, I think. I mean, I have no idea where it is, and I just hope, I agree with you. Out of all the guys I got working, Pompeo's probably on my short list, but he's also alone, Kevin. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff going on. We're talking about three countries over there that we're messing with, that have problems internally, that are making it on externally, because now the guy in Turkey is going to want to make everybody his, you know, the reason why that place basically sucks. And that's on one part of the world, and we're fighting the Chinese, same thing on the other side. I mean, are we ready for all this? Why did we have to open up all this stuff at the same time? Was that bright or not? I don't think so.
You know, I don't know. I know this. I have not seen an administration multitask like this one, for better or for worse. I'm not saying it's good, but I am saying that you know, they do address more issues simultaneously than any administration I've seen in a long time. So they are, you know, can they juggle that well? Don't know. Guess we'll know. Give me another year, and I'll let you know.
Well, and I don't want, I absolutely do not want Iran to have nuclear capability, right? Because I think the people up top are unstable. Okay, now if...
Because you're afraid they'll use them.
Well, but I thought I just said that. But yes, like people have...
Yeah. Well, I'm just...
But you know what? You know what, Kevin? There was the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. How many years ago was that? We were kids. It was what? The U.S., Britain, France, and Russia. Five of us, right? No, there was four of us. Or it was even China was in there, right? So there was five countries. Nobody else was supposed to get them. Correct? Well, we've looked the other way.
Right.
We've looked the other
way. How'd that work?
Israel's got them. I'm absolutely convinced they do. We know Pakistan's got them. India's got them. So, I don't know, the Ukraine probably still has them with the new country that they are. So if I do the Don Corleone thing and I put myself in the head of the guy, the mind of the guy who's running Iran, I'm surrounded. Every single person's got him but me. Who the hell is this country on the other side of the world telling us everybody can have him but me? I don't want him to have him. I'm on our side. But, I mean, look, it's not like he would be six. He'll be like 10. Right?
Yeah. So, you know, I hear what you're saying. Is that enough? Is that logic enough? I would guess to say, well,
it's okay. No. It's absolutely not enough. No, but what I'm saying is, looking from his point of view, wait a minute. How much worse are we than Pakistan? I don't know. I mean, what if Pakistan and India start lobbing them at each other? Is that a good thing? How many bazillion people are going to kill?
It's not a good thing. It's not a good thing for any of us.
Yeah.
And excuse me. Don't have a cough button on this phone. So we go back to the question is, you know, and what you're articulating, I think, pretty well is, you know, can you look at this from both sides, really? And, you know, can you put yourself in an Iranian leader's shoes, you know, like them or not, hate them or not, think they're immoral, amoral, or it's the Antichrist or it's the hero of the world. Can you just look at what they're doing and make some kind of rational sense of it? Because we have a tendency, I think we have more of a tendency than we should, to look at opposition leadership and sort of, you know, treat them like, oh, I don't know, madmen, knaves, you know, whatever you want to, whatever label you want to put on them. And I think they are mostly rational actors. They're just rational in bad ways.
Right. I think that just about that was one of the things that was a huge theme at the University of Chicago in a couple of behavioral science. Assume even crooks act rationally, not the ones that, you know, go after kids or rape or murder, those kinds of things. But everybody goes out to steal cars, goes out to steal your wallet, goes out to do something, there's some rationale to it. How they pick their targets, how concerned they are about being caught, all kinds of stuff. I mean, don't assume they're not rational. At some level. And I honestly agree with that. I mean, I think that when you have a regime that does this kind of stuff just to make themselves okay at home for a while, because if they don't, their own people are coming after them. I think and we did this in Russia. Obviously, they're not all the same. The strategy, I think, would be whenever you can to just do minor stuff, make sure that they don't get too far out of line. Hit them whenever they make a move someplace. You parry the move, as they used to say in, you know, whatever, boxing, whatever. And then you hope that they run out of gas and get taken over by the inside. Same thing that happened to Gorbachev. I don't know that you can, whenever you try and come at them from the outside and change regimes, we found that out in Vietnam, all it does is make everybody there pissed off. I mean, we tried to be a regime changer in Vietnam. How many people did that cost us? But they also know that one of these things is different.
Well, quite a few, and yes, regime change has not been our strong suit. So I agree with you there. So I guess the question is, which Corleone do we have running the family here, Michael or Sonny?
I don't know. I think we might have Sonny, and that's a problem. I hope not.
Well, and that, yeah, that can be a problem. Now, is there room for us to push back some? Yeah, I think so. Sometimes I think we just haven't pushed back enough. So there's room for that. It's just, you know, it takes a rather deft touch.
Well, you know what?
I'm not sure that we have a deft touch at the helm here.
Well, I looked at and I'm not Mr. Geography. Boy, I tell you what, if you were to hit me up with countries around the world and the capitals and who runs the place, I'd get a 10 on that test. But if you get a chance today and you have 2 seconds, and I know everybody can do this, hit up your, I don't want to give anybody a plug, especially since I don't like them, your Google Maps or MapQuest, buzz yourself over to the Middle East. Put the Persian Gulf in the middle and just expand it and look at where everybody is. And I'm going to say, Kevin, if you drop me in somewhere in Washington, and I won't say the Oval, put me in Foggy Bottom over at and you give me a 10-year plan, and I look at that map and I'm going to say, here's my plan. Everybody to the right in the Persian Gulf, I got a problem with. And seemingly now I have a problem with Turkey, which a month ago was my ally. But Iran's a problem. Russia's a problem. And these guys to the north of Turkey are a problem. Now, the left side looks like a bleep hole. We got Iraq, and we got who's ever running Saudi Arabia. This guy's somewhat got to go. There has to be more of a group over there. My 10-year plan would be to build up the left side, to get Iraq to be a regular place again. When I say again, something that can be reckoned with that would be our ally. And somehow, I don't want to do regime changes there either. If the Saudi Arabian and Iraq side were our side and our allies and they were strong and we could count on them to do something, even if it was just bases, the whole map looks different. So, as a long-term plan, and I think that probably might have been Bush 2's plan to go to Iraq in the first place, to make that our ally. And somehow...
I think it was to make it our ally and to be less reliant on the Saudis, because the Saudis tend to play both sides against them.
And somehow we totally screwed that up, or it was never there in the first place. I don't know which. But what I'm saying is, that is right now, if I look at, just from looking at that yesterday, the 10 minutes I took to do that, that's the long-term solution. And if that happens, we can wait out Iran, and 20 years from now, when these guys all croak, maybe there aren't young mullahs that they're going to be strong enough to keep the place away from the secular people. That would be my ideal situation. Now, can we get there? I don't know. you know. But I know that every year you sort of get there, you don't kill people. Our side and their side. I mean, every year we did the detente with Russia, nobody got killed, right? And it ended up working out our way, but pretty much everywhere along the line, every year was our way because we didn't lose anybody, right?
Yeah. The question is, has it really worked out our way? Has it just worked out a different, you know?
Well, it did for a while.
A slightly different path.
Well, it did for a while, and then until this guy got along.
I don't know. One of the problems there is that, you would like the populace to seize control, but they can't because they don't have any of the guns.
Well, that is a problem. I'm not saying it's easy, and I'm not saying I would give myself an 80% chance. I just said a strong Iraq and a solid Saudi Arabia appears to be the answer by looking at the map. Just saying. That's if you're down 6.25, Duffy's down 61. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. He's Matt Weber educating on the board. He's got a new intern, Jack. Jack is welcome, Jack. S&P futures down 775. NASDAQ futures down 1850, so we're leaking a little bit. Dow futures down about 65. Individual stocks in the Dow, virtually all of them are trading pre-market. I don't see anybody doing anything, really. I've got the Apple down 26 cents. The Apple's down to 186.40. Wow. So again, not much of anything moving in there, just kind of a general average move. Around the rest of the world, over in Europe, we've got DAX down 52.4%. FTSE only down 5, call that flat. Kekkonen down 19, that's 4% as well. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 121. Finally, these guys have a little bit of a bounce. 0.6%, Shanghai's up 55, that's almost 2%. Back over 2,900, 2,938. Hang Seng up 146, 28,268. We've got oil, back down a little bit today after they had to move up yesterday with the tensions in the Mideast. Down 54 cents, 61.24. Brent down 28, 70.96. RBOB 198. We've got gold back up 230, trying to get back over 1300, 1298.70. Silver, 1482. Copper, 272. So actually it's up a little bit from the 267 a couple weeks ago. So that, you know, if you're a copper indicator that how China's doing, it's up just a tad. What do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports? Who's ever doing it over there?
It's still me. 37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out
by
there.
Way, Jack's not going to do a Thomas on us and have like a, a crash at Madison and North, is he?
Well, he is from New Jersey, so he's got to learn the streets here. But already maybe put him ahead of Thomas. We already have a couple of crashes to report this morning. Kennedy inbound at Cumberland Avenue. There is an accident that's causing a bit of a slowdown as folks are navigating toward downtown. No issues on the Edens. Traffic building on the Eisenhower and Stevenson, but no accidents to report. Southside expressways are looking great. Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford. I-355 out in the burbs is looking good, too. Same with the Tri-State. The only issue besides that crash on the Kennedy is a pretty significant one. 8094, right near the Illinois-Indiana border, there's an overturned semi in the three left lanes on the eastbound side just before Calumet Avenue. This has the I-80 completely jammed in both directions because you have the gapers on the westbound side as well. If you can avoid I-80 this morning heading toward Indiana.
Damn those gapers.
I would absolutely do that because the eastbound side just before Calumet Avenue is pretty much completely blocked due to an overturned semi. Crews are on the scene working on that, but that's probably going to take a while. Weather today, a nice day in the city. Will be mostly cloudy, but there will be some sunshine. A high of 69. Could hit the mid-70s further inland, but near the lake, a high of just 69. Could have some rain later on as well, but very pleasant during the day today. Right now, it is mostly cloudy and 56 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, another hot one. Sunshine with a high of 99 today. Right now, it's clear and 73. In sports, Cubs keep winning, and they're doing it with pitching, led by Kyle Hendricks, who's been spectacular.
He got three hits. He scored, he blew in all the runs.
They topped the Reds last night in Cincinnati 3-1. White Sox were blasted by the Indians 9-0. Diamondbacks lost to the Pirates 6-2. And the NBA draft lottery was decided last night, and the Bulls had a 12.5% chance at number one. And the worst they could do was number 8. Well, they did the second worst they could do. They are slotted in to draft number 7 for the second year in a row.
Is there a big difference between 4 and 7, you think?
I don't know, actually. That's a good question. I think there's a big difference between 2 and 7. But 4-7, you can probably get a quality guy at either spot, and there might not be much difference. The Suns will pick right ahead of the Bulls. They were number one last year. This year, they're drafting number six. The New Orleans Pelicans earn your number one pick in the 2019 NBA draft. Chief.
Still can't get used to that name.
Kind of like their name.
Well, I mean, there's more Pelicans in Florida than there are in New Orleans.
Although there are Pelicans in Louisiana.
Well, yeah, but
absolutely.
You wouldn't exactly... They're like the state bird of Florida.
Are they? They might be the state bird of Louisiana.
Well, they could be.
I'll look it up.
I thought it was like the alligator. No, that's not a bird.
That's not quite a bird.
No. You know what the state bird of New York is, don't you?
Oh, God.
Are you going to say the dodo?
No, I'm going to say the middle finger.
Kevin, I, as you know,
by the way, the state bird in Louisiana, do you have a guess, Chief?
I have no idea. The buzzard?
It's the brown pelican.
Really?
Yes.
There you go. Yeah, well, that was wrong. What is it in Florida?
State bird in Florida is the northern mockingbird.
What is that?
I don't know.
Hey. Anyway. Kevin, the thing that makes me nervous, I mean, you and I joust all the time about, you know, stuff, which, by the way, keeps us young, I think. But, Mike, as you can figure out probably, the theme I have in all this stuff is I'm not sure, even if our people knew their economic stuff well when they were young, I'm not so sure a lot of this applies anymore in today's economy. I mean, when I hear people from the right and the left having this massive argument about socialism versus capitalism, I'm not sure that what we're looking at today even lends itself to that argument, because we don't really have any competitive capitalism in a lot of areas. We have some socialism in some areas. We always have. I mean, it's almost an argument not worth having. I look at this tariff situation, and I know that, I'm going to use a term here that doesn't even exist anymore. I'm going to say that in a perfectly competitive world, okay, when everybody in the world can make widgets and does, and all of a sudden we get pissed off at Mattie Weber's country, and we drop a 20% tariff on Mattie Weber's widgets, and we somehow are smart enough to figure out that he can't ship them to Jay-Z's world and come in that way or get around it or whatever it is, we're probably going to kind of screw Mattie Weber's guys, because the price that the rest of the world is going to hold, and they're going to have to lower theirs 20%, to compete. Okay, so they are going to get screwed. They're not going to pay the tariffs, as somebody might say, in office, but we in essence can screw them. But that happens so rarely. Now, what if you were in the Oval Office and your big bazoo is touting on these tariffs like there's no tomorrow and the Japanese are paying them or whatever, and then you see an article the other day from like Morgan Stanley that says, by the way, their studies, now who the hell knows how many people they put on and how rigorous it was, you know, who knows, but they claim that the effects are nowhere near what we intended. And I give the example of the people in the auto glass business, the guys I play softball with. They claim that the day our 10% tariff dropped on Chinese, let's say the Chinese have half the market, our guys raised their prices 10% and said, yippee. It had exactly the opposite effect of whatever. So our people not only are paying the 10%.
If it was supposed to make U.S. companies relatively more competitive, it did, but they're also jumping in on the margins and raising their prices.
No, so because we don't have any place other than maybe agriculture that is a perfectly competitive world. If we're importing 50% of our steel and we put a steel tariff on, say, the other 50 are coming from China, which is not right, but if it did and we put a tariff there, I think our guys just say, yahoo, and raise theirs. Now, that's not what we're intending, I don't think, because maybe it helps our those guys a little bit. Maybe they put it in plant and equipment, which I can handle. Maybe they just pay themselves a bigger paycheck. I'm not so sure that's what I want. If it doesn't include everybody. If it includes everybody, I'll roll with it, but I bet it doesn't. I mean, our economy has gotten so different, Kevin, in the last 30, 40 years, I think, maybe even the last 50 years, to where it's gotten so concentrated in so many industries, and the competition is not anything remotely perfectly competitive that I would define if I was back in school.
I don't know that that's any different than it ever was, though. So if you go back to the 80s when everybody was so concerned about the auto industry and Japanese auto manufacturers, so we slapped a bunch of tariffs on the Japanese, it did accomplish one thing. It caused the Japanese to set up more production in the United States. But aside from that, what companies like Ford and GM did was they banked the extra money that they could make.
You're talking about an industry that never was. Yeah, you're talking about an industry that never was competitive.
Right.
But I'm going to guess if you put a tariff on steel in 1920, what do we import? 5%? I don't think it did anything. The competition was from here.
Yeah, but regardless, all the behaviors are predictable. Everybody's going to act in best interests, and that doesn't necessarily mean that the theoretical is going to fly.
Well, what I'm saying is, if that's the case for the first 10%, which according to Morgan Stanley, it's not working like, let's say, the Oval Office intended it to work. Now, do you have an obligation to read that article, pause for a week, and say, are these guys right, before you drum it up to 25%? I would say yes, because you're screwing your own people more than you are those guys. I mean, and for Larry Kudlow to go out and say it's worth it, it's like the other buffoon, Commerce Secretary, saying, if you got a problem with money and you're not getting your paycheck from the federal government, go get a short-term low-interest loan. Who's going to give it to you? To me, you? I mean, where does somebody now get a short-term low-interest loan when a credit card's at 24%?
See the fund, huh?
Yeah. I mean, where are we at?
Yeah, I think you're right, and people tend to be out of touch, and they tend to get the consequences they don't intend, whether it falls under the category of unintended consequences or the category of, well, duh, what'd you expect? I kind of fall into Hal's point of view on that, Hal Snar's point of view, where he says we should just say thank you and buy the cheap goods. You're not going to get much of an argument out of me, and you know, and because you mentioned it on the air yesterday, you know what my larger concern is with this is, if sooner or later we're going to resolve all of this, that's great, but by then I think we will have baked in the a new price level, and I don't think they're going to go back down.
I think you're probably right, but you know, it's funny when Hal said that, he's actually very very much Friedmanistic, if that's a word. I mean, but Milton Friedman was a little more rigorous in his explanation, as the guy always was, more than me, more than Hal. Actually, he talked about this for a half hour one day in a class, and I remember it like it was yesterday. I can't remember what he had for breakfast, but I can remember this stuff. He said,
God, I hope my students will say the same thing someday.
Yeah, well, but
keep going.
His point was, when we talk about illegally dumping here and people are, you know, that kind of stuff, there's two ends of this. There's actually a definition to illegally dumping to where, I mean, not illegally, but dumping to where, you know, most of the talking heads don't even know what the hell they're talking about. But in our mind, in other words, if it's Kevin and Chief's steel company and we think we need $100 a pound for steel because both of us feel we need $5 million a year to live on. By the way, I do. I mean, I don't know if you do, but I need to do that.
I can squeak by on four.
The only way I can deal with the small, you know, the no leg room on the planes is to have my own private jet. I was on a private jet. A guy let me look at his once. I never got off the ground. But anyway, if they come in with a price that's 10% cheaper, then you and I are bitching and moaning because if we met that price, which we probably could, we don't get paid as much. That's not dumping, Kevin. that's just competing and being efficient. That's like I'm charging $2 for a beer because I can live on $100,000 owning a saloon, and you think you need $500,000, and you're charging $4 for a beer. But guess what? The beer costs both of us 50 cents. That's not dumping. Okay, you know what I'm saying? So Milton Friedman's idea: if somebody actually was willing to sell the steel at $50 a ton, when the cost of the iron, the power, and everything else was actually 70. To where they actually really were dumping it at like $20 less than anybody on earth, you know, the Holy Ghost could make it because the inputs were actually 70 and he's selling at 50. His advice was just like Hal's: buy it. If somebody's willing to do that, let's stock up on it till they go out of business, right? I mean, what's the point? Stock up on it. They'll go out of business soon. And again, we got a whole bunch of steel for $50 we needed to pay 70 for. Well, our guy's idea of dumping is not dumping in most cases. Well, dumping means you actually sell it to somebody for less than the cost of inputs. I don't think we're seeing any of that. Do you?
Well, and you do it to keep an industry alive. Yeah. I mean, that's the other part of it.
Well, but that's different. That's when the federal government says, go ahead and sell it at 50 because I'll give you the other 20 because I want you alive. But a company themselves can't, you know, what's the, well, there used to be an ethnic joke, but let's not call it an ethnic joke. The entrepreneurs and the Christmas trees. We'll go buy them at $5, we'll sell them at $3. The guy says, this night's working. The other guy says, let's bring two trucks. I mean, it doesn't work.
We can make it up in quantity.
You know, make it up in quantity. Because that wasn't after, you can't tell ethnic jokes anymore. Even if, I guess I can tell Irish and Italian jokes, can I?
Yeah, I think you're allowed to hit your own people.
Well, the African American guy on Saturday Night Live says he can use the N-word.
Yeah, I know he says that.
I know. I don't. I'd rather nobody use that
one. But let's not get too upset then when someone else does.
Well, I know. It's yeah. I just think something.
I'd rather make it all go away. Although,
yeah,
you know, there are ways to tell ethnic or you know, there's non offensive ways. There's non offensive yes. ethnic jokes too.
Plus, you know, people have to have the ability to poke fun at themselves a little bit because there are differences in people. You know, it's not. I mean, humor is still part of the daily life. I hope, we don't know that. So, Kevin, we've been arguing back and forth all week on all kinds of topics. What's your favorite one?
What's my favorite one? Well, you know, obviously education is near and dear to my heart, so we've had some back and forth on that. But really, you know, some of the discussions we've had really weren't centered around what to do, but of more, you know, how much of it is happening. And,
right.
and you know, my contention is that that some emerging educational models are more widespread than we think. It just tends to be centered away from major cities because that's where people are nimble enough to change.
I'm going to give you a question from way over the top. And if you read, you know, he was kind of an odd duck in a lot of ways, but if you read a lot of Jefferson's stuff, Thomas Jefferson, not George, he had very
dim. Actually, there's a lot of wisdom from George Jefferson.
I would agree. I would agree. He had a very dim view of, shall we say, a democracy or republic over a long period of time, in the sense that it would maneuver itself in ways that tend to become less democratic and less whatever. And I don't think there's any doubt, Kevin, that is happening. And I don't know. I don't know what we've got massive, even when it comes to laws. I mean, I would say that if I could stop time for a month, and I'd have to do it for a couple of people. You'd have to come with me because I'm not as good a writer. We could make one of the most glaring, antitrust, anti-everything, anti-American, anti-economic treatise regarding the higher education thing. With its combination of money coming from this place, that place, government funding, land grants, stuff people got, stuff other people don't get, how the laws, if you're a for-profit place and somebody can't get a job when they get out, somehow you screwed them, and yet if you're at University of Illinois or Notre Dame and somebody can't get a job, you're okay. I mean, just the way the whole thing works for all these places, I would really start over, Kevin, because I think there's nothing but law breaking all along the line. You know, I'll start with something simple because we're not going to solve this now, but the idea that a university has different, whatever, even if they have a scholarship group, even if they ever, whoever would design a deal where people get tax dodges for giving donations to a place, and a place is a school. Most of them, they are, despite what people say, they are for profit. They're for somebody's profit. Whether it's the trustees, whether it's the guys that work there, they're making money. Just because there's not shareholders doesn't mean there's not money being made. That's another definition I think we need to come across. Nobody cares about shareholders making money anymore, Kevin. That's the new world, as Eric has so eloquently pointed out. The managerial class is now the enemy because they don't even care about shareholders. At least when Rockefeller and those guys were plundering, they were plundering for themselves because they owned the place. You can understand that. Now you don't even care. Now you're above everybody. You're above shareholders. You're above government, whatever. But the idea that if I were to say, Kevin, Jack, Matty, go in and buy some hamburger, and I'm the butcher, and you walk up and you say, I would like to buy some hamburger. How much is it? And my next question is, how much you got? Well, how would that go over? It would be like a fart in church, wouldn't it, Kevin? Yeah, isn't that what every college...
Well, it would. It wouldn't get you much business in a free economy.
But now every college does the exact same thing.
But you're right. That is sort of the college model that we've wound our way up to. You know?
Yeah, and why?
And a sentence and a preposition as an educator, but...
What I'm saying, it's the... I'm saying is... Why would you ever? Why is it Notre Dame's job to have this massive puddle of money where they can pay all these people a lot of dough to quote manage, and lob out managing contracts to people on money people gave them tax deductible? So when you walk in, if they like you, they can charge you $40,000 instead of $70,000. Like you, meaning they want you there for whatever reason. Maybe you're smarter. Maybe you can kick a football. Maybe you can do something. Kevin, that's unconscionable. Notre Dame should charge whatever they feel like charging, and that money, if you want to go get a loan, you should go to a bank or someplace, or if the government wants to put money into a scholarship arena, that should be totally taken away from the place. There should be one price where everybody walks in a door and pays, like in every other thing you buy. And yet what I just said is so kind of, people, if I said that on national TV, the book would come out. Yet, why are they any different?
Yeah, they aren't there, and frankly, the idea, you know, I'll even take it a little further, and this is sort of the fallacy of the movement to do free college for all, and that is that most of the jobs that we're going to create, well, I don't want to say most, let's say that something like 60% of the jobs that we create in our economy over the next 10 years are going to require something beyond a high school diploma.
Yes.
But only about half of those are actually going to require a college degree. So now we're talking about, 30% of the jobs are going to require a college degree. And yet we have a movement going on to make college available to everybody for free. So now let's go back to the college model.
First of all, there's
we're going to push that kind of demand on the system.
Well, there's no word as free.
What's going to happen to the prices?
Well, the free to who? Free to somebody, but not free to give.
Right.
So somebody's
got to
pay.
Not free to everybody. What it's really going to be is it's going to be a transfer cost towards the wealthy, because the people who are going to go are more likely to go to college for free. Are going to be the people from the better educational systems at the high school level. So yeah, we're just gonna, it's all going to be baked into taxing, and we're just going to tax poor people to send rich people to college.
Well, I mean, it's all in the how you work it out, and we never work anything out very well. I mean, when you come back, hey Kevin, can you hang in a little longer today, or what are you doing? You got to head off.
Yeah, I can hang for a few minutes.
I think Russell ended up being on a plane, so we could use it for a little bit. But when you look at the success of, say, the GI Bill, if you're I'm going to say non-rigorous, you're going to say this was a great idea. Let's send people that fought for their country, let's send them to college for free, okay, as a reward for doing whatever they did. Plus, they obviously, while they were in the Army, they didn't have a chance to go to school and blah, blah, blah. There was a lot of reasons for it. But you also dropped in on a system where the education was incredibly cheap. I mean, I got to believe, the place we know best, Notre Dame had, the school was, I'm going to say, semi-shut down, right? And the Navy had a big, didn't the Navy have a school there of some kind?
It would have been shut down had it not been for the Navy setting up training there.
But I mean, the question I'm asking, I don't know the answer. Were there no Notre Dame graduates, regular graduates, in 1944, or were there
no,
just
there
a
were
few?
Some, but there wouldn't have been enough to operate the school.
Right, so there were some. Right, so
yep.
I'm going to say that the idea that the Army Navy could send people to DePaul, where my stepfather went, or Notre Dame, or someplace after the war, I'm going to guess that investment what was it, 300 hours a year? 400? 200? I mean, we're talking about a number that in terms of worth it, is about as worth it as you could ever get. Now, but if you just take the logic and move it forward to today, oh, we should do that again. A guy who spends 2 years in the Army should get a 4-year, $70,000 degree per year at Northwest. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Now, that's we're not even on the same planet, Kevin, is what I'm saying. It's not just what you do, it's how you pay it and what you spend, right? I mean, SP Futures down 10, NASDAQ Futures down 26. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board with his assistant, Jack. S&P Futures down 10, Nasdaq Futures down 26. We're leaking down. Now, we were up almost half yesterday, but we were down on Monday, so it's kind of an odd week in that regard. So individual stocks in the Dow, I've got biggest mover probably is McDonald's up 69 cents, but nobody else is up or down a bunch. But like I said, the Dow future is down like 50-some points. But remember, as we talk once in a while, $1 in the Dow is like $7.50 in the average. So it's definitely the odd sort of multiplier we have these days. So Kevin, I just get this feeling when I watch what's going on all these different levels of government, I almost think we need a constitutional convention at like every level, you know, in the city, the state, maybe even the Fed. There's a continuing ed test that I'm taking, and it has to do with all the different people that regulate the financial communities. And I honestly believe, Kevin, that if you were to make the head of the House and Senate Financial Services Committee take this test, if they had any sense whatsoever, they would, at the end of the day, they would call everybody together and say, stop it. we need to get this stuff together in such a way. This needs to be redone. You know, just give you a quick example that if you are an investment advisor firm that has over $100 million in management, which started out as 20, by the way, like 7 or 8 years ago, you didn't have to register with all the idiotic states. You could go right to the SEC. Well, of course, the states squealed like you were sticking them, you know, in behind. So now that's up to $100 million. Okay, which is a lot of dough. A percent firms starting out, there's not a whole lot of $100 millions is around. I mean, right? Even if you have clients that average $1 million a head, it's 100 clients. That's a lot. I mean, right? So then the idea is, so if all of a sudden you and I started, you know, Kevin and Chief's investment advisor firm, and somebody dropped us like $500 million. Okay, so we can flip our nose to Illinois and Indiana and Michigan, and we can sign with the SEC. But guess what? Every one of our advisors still has to be registered in all the states where they do business. So what did we gain from this? Exactly. Who thought of this? If you're going to allow people, if you're big enough, to not have to mess with all the states and their loser representatives, let them do it. Or don't let them do it. One or the other. But we constantly end up in this middle ground where people fight for this stuff. And now there's an entirely different set of rules and regulations, whether you're an SEC person or a state person. Even though all your SEC people, all your state people, all your people who work for you are still state people. I mean, could you possibly design something like that from the top and say this was an A paper?
No. So how do we get there? And the answer is, well, we get there step by step.
But I don't see how you.
The thing is, nobody ever steps back and says, how have we gotten here? How can we improve this? How can we fix this? And bureaucracies don't go away anyway. They give ground very, very grudgingly, so they're not going to go away.
But it's also in people, Kevin. And I don't, maybe you can, well, you're more attuned to this, and maybe you would push for it more than me, because you're a tad more stubborn and more of a terrier than me, maybe in some things. I don't see how. I mean, the one board that I was on, the CBOE, I can't imagine, Kevin, a group of 12, 15, 18 people. No matter how diversified you make it, if you made sure you got five women and five whatever, no matter what you did, if you had a book that had 50 pages of whatever you want to call it, security for the CBOE or for Better World Books or for your school you're now involved in, where schools got to have all that stuff going now. You never thought they did, but they do. And all of a sudden, you know, nobody knows who the hell the CBOE even is anymore. They changed the name. At some point, if you sit there as a board member and go, you know, I don't really think we need four security people on the sidewalk. Nobody even trades here anymore, damn near. I think we could get away with three. I can't imagine, Kevin, there's a board on earth that would make that vote. Because if all of a sudden somebody rushed the front door and somebody got hurt and the legal system took over and they would say, this chief guy made a motion to go from 4-3. Kevin seconded it, and the other idiots all said, this is a good idea. And the next day, we're going to say that if you had four people out there instead of three, none of this would have happened. I don't see how you ever, ever come back on that, even though there isn't a soul on earth that thinks you don't need four idiots walking up and down the sidewalk. Not that there are. But I mean, I don't see how in any session we have, not to mention, if all of a sudden it's 25 years now and everything we talked about on the show, all of a sudden the people in Iran have a thriving democracy and they won all these guys out. Putin's long gone and Russia is well on its way to democracy. All this stuff happened. The last Al Qaeda guy saw the light and he joined whatever, the Presbyterian Church. All this stuff.
Going to church.
Yeah, all of this stuff happened.
They're going to synagogue.
Yeah, going to synagogue. all this stuff happened, and 20 years from now, you and I stand up and say, you know, maybe it's time we cut back on this TSA. We don't really need a cavity search or we get on a plane anymore. I don't see how that ever happens, Kevin. Do you? I mean,
I'd settle for getting to wear my shoes.
Yeah, or if your pants are too big, you take your belt off and you got to hold your pants up while you're going through the thing. I don't see how you ever come back. I mean, was Jefferson right that you almost need like another revolution and start over? Because I see some of this crap, I don't see it ever coming back. I could see Chicago with 50 people and all of them being aldermen, because you got to have 50 aldermen. I mean, I honestly don't know. I don't even know where to start. And I think you could probably spend...
I don't either, but you know what? We should be able to chip away. That's, you know, I go back to what I was saying earlier, that so much of the good stuff that's happening in education is happening away from the largest cities, because there are areas where people can move nimbly. And, you know, I just visited some of them last week. Now, it's State of New York, and it's State of New York funded, which I think is really good for them. But the way they've done it is they have, God, I think they told me like 36 PTEC districts, and each one gets to find its own way. So they get to work, you know, they get to work with the local business communities to put together ways to, you know, develop their workforce, and they get to do it in ways that make sense for them. So they're still operating at a very local level, and I think that's a good thing. You know, how will that spread back to a place like Chicago that, you know, that just doesn't, you know, I would not call Chicago city government nimble.
No.
That would not be one of the words I'd use to describe it. So how does it do that? How does it do that in Phoenix? I don't know, because I don't know anything about Phoenix city government. So, the point is that, you know, the incubators are there. How will it spread? How will we take advantage of it? I'm not sure. I tend to be pessimistic and think, you know, sooner or later government's going to figure out how to get in the way.
I don't see how. To me, and everybody thinks all I do is rail on the president. And the extent that I do, I'm seriously pissed off at him, because I thought, coming from the outside, he had the greatest chance in my lifetime to bring some good and to bring some change. And just like the guy before him, he got himself somehow co-opted in the wrong way by the wrong people. Now, I don't know where the hell he's headed, which bothers me. But it doesn't really bother me any worse than Obama being co-opted and doing the things that I... But somehow, some way, Kevin, and you know this is not my personality, because I don't like firing people. I don't like anything. I would say that if I was governor, I would walk into the board at the University of Illinois, and I would say, you know, I've heard rumors to the effect that we are preferencing people from overseas for a lot of the majors here instead of people in our own state, even people that have, you know, paid for their, you know, advanced tuition programs and everything, because we charge them a premium. And that we are preferencing people from Iowa and Indiana and Wisconsin over our own people because they pay more. And they're doing the same to us. Is this true? And if the answer is yes, Kevin, I just have to say, here's a stack of resignation letters. I'd like each one of you to sign them. I think it has to be that bold. There was an article in the paper yesterday, we signed a Tribune. There have been something like 55 in the last however many years strangulation deaths, mostly of black women, on the east and west sides. Virtually, you know, I'm not reading the crime reports, but a lot of them incredibly similar. And the Tribune said, we got a problem here. There's like a serial killer or two or a copycat or something. The city, this police department, for many months refused to put a task force together, even four or five people to investigate it. I'm going to say I want the people in the room that refuse to do that. And first of all, I'll probably follow them for a day or two to find out what they're really friggin' doing. And I'm going to say I want everybody's resignation on this table. I don't see how you don't do that, Kevin. And it's so against my personality. And I thought maybe that was the one good, even though I was an individual. I never liked the man because he didn't pay people, Trump. I thought that maybe there was the one hunk of stones that he could bring to the table. And yet I don't see it. I mean, I think all these, we're at the point now where people need the cold slap in the face, like the, was the Aquavelva commercial?
Well, he is, in fact, willing to fire people who don't follow orders or don't.
Yeah, but it seems to involve
direction.
Him. Yeah.
And in many cases, he should. But he also has this management style that is, well, I can hire him, I can fire him. He, me from the outside looking in, and the way I see this is he falls in love with people very quickly. He gets enamored of people very quickly. He brings them on board not really knowing what he's getting, and he's perfectly willing to say, if it doesn't work out, we'll just dump him quickly. You know, and that's not the way stable organizations run. That's not the way something, you know, with a long-term vision happens successfully. It just doesn't, because you lose the continuity and you have to keep starting over again.
Well, I know this is exactly your area, and Kevin is spectacular at the management style, and that's what he teaches, but I always thought, Kevin, that if I was a leader any place, that even if the people that I'm now leading were a bunch of schlumps, for lack of a better term, that they never had me as a leader before, and if I could come in and do a better job, somehow they would come along with me. But I'm not sure that some of these people aren't so ingrained that you might have to fire half the lieutenants in the city of Chicago who are supposed to be at work in their home. I don't know how you ever bring people back from that. I don't know how you have those people on the same board that somehow voted that it's a better idea so they could give a raise to their pals to have people from China in class and turning our people away. That mentality, I don't think I can change that, Kevin. I think those people just need to be gone.
Well, you may be right, and I could even be fine with the idea. And in fact, I've done this. You know, I spent a lot of my career doing turnarounds, but not full company turnarounds, more at the department level, and taking things that just weren't working and figuring out how to make them high performing. So I've been through that process a lot, and there have been plenty of people who were part of the wrong way, who stayed on board for the long haul and wound up being really great at implementing a new way. Somebody's got to have the vision for it, and they have to buy in. I've had people fall by the wayside just as much, but you can get people to change. It's just that there's got to be some shared interest there.
I would see,
and that isn't always easy. That takes a little bit of a touch. People have to believe that you're deadly serious, but by the same token, they have to know that that you have some value and you want to make them part of it. Now, if you can pull that off, I don't know that our president has that kind of a touch, or actually, I do know that he doesn't. But,
well, you wish he did. I mean, you know. But I don't know that. I think if somebody, like if you followed around a city inspector and you found out that he inspected 2 hours a day instead of eight, I'm not so sure having me as his boss all of a sudden get the guy hustling. Maybe it's just time to go.
No, that doesn't. That's just dishonest. And dishonest people tend to be serially dishonest. So, that's different. There's just some people who have never been taught a right way to do things.
Well, I mean, I don't know what 50 aldermen do all day if you get rid of the zoning things. Everybody does work on zoning things that they go back and forth with, with their law firm. What do they do all day? I mean, if you take what I consider to be the fraud out of it, do you need 50?
And that's one of the nice things in the corporate world. If you don't need 50, you can cut yourself back.
Well, but in the business world, even today, well, actually, you can see that. If you call your your bank, your credit card company, or if you call Commonwealth Edison or People's Gas, it's like calling your alderman. Same crap. They don't know what they're talking about. They're not willing. They don't help it. It's because they are the government. They're the same thing. A bureaucracy is a bureaucracy. Doesn't have to be the government. I mean, how if you get treated poorly by a guy at Commonwealth Edison or a lady, or they don't know what they're talking. I can't even. I mean, I kind of manage a building, and I, you know, there's not a whole lot of issues. And every time I've called somebody, I've managed to work my way through the phone maze and find somebody that did something, even though it was the second supervisor. All I keep thinking about, Kevin, is what if, you know, I'm the DACA girl, and I'm speaking, you know, half English, half Spanish, and I don't know how this quote system works. What chance do they have going through the phone maze at Commonwealth Edison or People's Gas? Not to mention the city on a parking ticket or something, or something like that. I don't think even.
Oh, yeah. The young woman I had on, Leslie, yeah. She spends a lot of time with family and friends who either don't speak English well or at all, and spends a lot of time navigating the system with them, as you know, just as something she does. And it's one of the really cool things about any Hispanic community is there is a family feel to it. But yeah, I don't know how you would navigate it otherwise, because it's hard enough for someone who speaks the language to do it.
Well, funny you should mention that, because Audrey sold some condominiums. Well, she sells a lot of stuff. And obviously, Audrey's very good at what she does. But she had a Hispanic family, and the grandmother, I think she's been here for a while, but she opened up one or two or three daycare centers, Kevin, and evidently she's very popular, has all the best people, passes every state inspection, the whole bit, and people can't wait till she opens up the next one, because there's always a waiting list to get the kids into her place. And I think she bought a condominium cash for, I don't know how many of her granddaughters. And just, you know, they're not $1 million, or, you know, but there's some place to live in the Southwest Side. That's what I'm doing for them. Here's 30 grand. Go find a nice little one bedroom, and when they get married, they'll sell it and move out. Go with their husband. I mean, but in the meantime, I want to have a place to live. Here it is. Here's a 30. You know,
like, well, and that's a model that's worked really well in with Asian groups.
Yeah,
a lot of the refugees that came here from like Vietnam in the 70s. You kind of formed neighborhoods, and the churn was totally inside the, you know, there was like a microeconomy inside the ethnic group, so that they spent money on each other, and by the time you got to the third generation, and I'm thinking of like my Thai neighbors from when I lived in Wisconsin, by the time you got to the third generation, they were pretty darn prosperous.
Yeah,
and that's who was moving out to suburbia and so on. But boy, every time you had a family event, and they were great neighbors. They always invited me to all their stuff too.
But
you could see the generations and the substantial differences between the generations. And
there's a fairly fairly large
how assimilated they were.
Fairly large Arab community out in the Southwest Side, or live in those areas, and it's going to sound awful when I say Arab community. How can I say this?
You know what I always advise people when they're about to say this sounds awful or this isn't politically correct.
No, I'm lobbying.
That's when you stop.
I can't tell, and I don't ask. I don't know if they're from Saudi. I don't know. I don't think they're from Iran. I would probably could tell that, but I don't know if they're from Saudi or if they're from Yemen or the Emirates. I can't. It's like, to be honest with you, If somebody from Asia walks up, I probably should be able to tell the difference between somebody who's Thai or Korean or whatever, but I really can't. I wish I could.
I can't.
Anyway, I think these guys are from Saudi, but the area is, and tell you what, Kevin, one of them finds out that you're good, you sell a house to one of them, and you're honest, boy, oh boy, you're being invited over for dinner, and there isn't a chance that somebody else in that family would ever use anybody else, ever, if you did the job right. And you know what? We don't act the same way. I don't quite know why.
Yeah, we go shop for the next one that's going to give us a percent off of the commission.
Yeah, you know, Audrey was kind of telling a story, and she had these bunch of people. It was actually her cousins. There's this old white guy. I could say that because I'm an old white guy. And he goes, yeah, you know, something about it, he just bought a new car. And I go, okay. And he lives in Orland. And he goes, yeah, you know, I know Joe that owns the Toyota. I forget the name of the Toyota dealer out there. And Joe, I think Joe's pissed at me because brought my car in there for service. And you know, I don't get to the front of the line. You know, I've known Joe forever. You know, we used to play ball together or something. I said, well, did you buy the car from Joe? Well, no. Where'd you buy it? Well, out in Naperville, somewhere on Ogden Avenue. I go, why? He goes, because it was in the paper. It was $75 cheaper. I said, wait a minute. You bought a $35,000 car. You think you saved $75, and you're convinced that Joe wouldn't have met the $75. Well, yeah. I said, I'm not so sure you're right about that. And oh, by the way, now I know why Joe's pissed. I mean, don't you get it? I mean, this is right after Audrey's telling a story about the Arab family, and if he treated somebody right, they would never go anywhere else. I'm like, this guy's, yeah, why wouldn't I? I said, it probably cost you $30 in gas. You get there and back. What are you doing? I mean, anyway.
And you know what? Again, this is something that in smaller communities, this is what makes the business communities work well when they do work well, and that is that you tend to do business with people if you know, like, and trust them.
Right.
And that's and that counts as much as anything that gets done with price.
Well, having your ad in the church,
maybe more. You know, maybe more, and it's one of the things I like about it. You know, that I really enjoy is, but people get, you know, the business communities can be very, you know, can be vibrant as a result of that. Small business communities.
In a Catholic church, having your ad in the church bulletin was gold. Why would you?
Oh yeah.
Why would you go anywhere else? I mean, the idea that, I mean, when I was growing up, there was a Sinclair station. There's the name. Remember Dino? Dino? Was it Dino or Dino?
Yep.
Dino. The little dinosaur. And Bob Dalgill owned the Sinclair station. And Bob sponsored a bowling team, and he gave some money to the church. He was in the Holy Name. The thought of getting your oil changed or any kind of service anywhere else but Bob Dalgill's would be like, what are you doing? I mean, obviously, you know, if you're getting a transmission job and they didn't do that, you'd go somewhere else. But why would you not, if you had to buy gas, why not go up there and have Bob Dalgill fix your tire and change your oil? I mean, why wouldn't you?
Yep.
He always gave you the right price. He was a nice guy. What's the point? I mean, and now, you know, if it's 48 cents cheaper on the internet, you're supposed to go to Milwaukee to get your oil changed, right? I don't know. I just kind of...
Well, there's a loss of community that goes with that. And, you know, I think that some of that is just the way society's changed, and some of it is that, you know, we've lost something valuable.
Well, I think so. But so, Kevin, how do we... We have what we obviously try to talk about in the show is, how does this affect people's investments? I mean, right now with the dangers in the world, I mean, there's always danger. I've never been in this business, no matter what. I tell you what, there was one day, Kevin, here's a quick story. I'm going to say it was the biggest day, and I don't want to go into how much money, a lot of money, that I ever had in a trading floor. I mean, no matter what, I always thought, once I got down to the pit, I never left. I used to show up at 10 o'clock and... There was a guy ahead of me that he'd make a few bucks, he'd go play basketball and go to the bar. So we kind of shared a spot, so it was kind of an odd deal. But, and there was room for both of us if we needed it. But anyway, this was a Friday afternoon. I could dig back and find it. There was a day when the market was doing nothing, and even I was thinking, boy, this is a nice day to go play golf, which I never did. All of a sudden, about 11:30 in the morning, Bush One came out with this idea that he should maybe have a usury limit on credit cards at 12%. The market starts heading south. Now, of course, this isn't regular people.
Dead man.
Yeah, he's a dead man. So all of a sudden, the market starts heading south. There were puts in the book at a 16th, at 6.25, and finished at $16. Market was down some massive amount of money. I mean, for those days. I mean, it was nothing like the 600 points, you know, the other day. But we were at a level where the Dow was probably, you know, 8,000. So, I mean, it was a big deal. And then all of a sudden on the weekend they reneged on it, and we came right back up on. So even when you think there's no news, there's news, or there's liable to be news or something. So there's never really a vacuum. I don't know when I've seen as much news as now. And I don't, and if I just had my, you know, and you, as I was talking about on another show I was on yesterday, a lot of people that are older because of the interest rates, because of the bond rates, are way more invested in stocks. Or way more invested in stocks than they normally would be. Not saying they should be. I'm saying normally would be because the interest rates aren't there. You start throwing these kinds of swings in the market on people that should be 50% invested that are 85% invested. This has to be causing a little bit of trauma, I'm thinking. I mean, are you sensing any of that? Or are people just not talking about it?
Yeah, you know what? Some of that's just technology, and that, you know, every utterance, every thought anybody has anymore that you know, relates to government, relates to administration, or anything like that, gets reported as news and as fact, frankly, which it isn't.
Well, Kevin, 20, we got a dash here, but 25% tariffs off again, on again, like she loves me not, is a big deal. I mean,
that is. But then you filter in all the other stuff, and you know, are we able to discern what's real and what's not, and how much of the news there is? Because you said it's just the quantity of it as well that gets us.
I would agree. Thank you for hanging around, buddy. Talk to you on Friday. SP futures down 13. We're leaking a little bit more than we were. NASDAQ futures down 36. When we came in, they were only down 7. So we've doubled that. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks, Mr. David Adelman. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Matt Weber about to wander out, but he has his man Jack on the board. SP futures down 16 and a quarter, NASDAQ futures down 45. Dow futures down 150. Retail sales just came out falling 2.2%. We're going to talk about that with David in a second. How the hell could they be up 1.7% last month and down 0.2% this month? Either April was a total clunker, or there was some timing problems. I don't know exactly sure which, and now we never find out which that is. We'll talk about it with David. So DAX now down 94.8%, so everybody's kind of leaking here. FTSE down 6.1%, still pretty close to flat. CAC around down 35.7%. Over in Asia, they're up a little bit because they were up with us yesterday. Nikkei up 121.6%, Shanghai up 55. It's 1.9, back over 2,900, 2,938. Hang Seng up 146.5. Still not anywhere near their 29,000 number, 28,268. Oil down 64 cents after the rally yesterday. Brent down 47 cents. Natural gas unchanged. RBOB unchanged at 197. Got gold rallying, playing with this 1300 number, 1299. I just saw it a minute ago at 1300 and something. So it's right about there. Silver unchanged at 1480. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still working on that serious overturned semi issue down on I-80. That's eastbound just before Calumet Avenue, right near the Illinois-Indiana border, pretty much right on the border. And that's blocking the three left lanes on the eastbound side. It's also slowing down the westbound side. We saw some pictures of it on Twitter, and it's completely jammed. So you want to avoid I-80 heading eastbound if you can this morning, as it's going to be a while. They have to clean up the load, then get the truck off of there, and then get everything else situated afterwards. So that's been going on for the last hour and a half or so, and it looks like it's not going anywhere. And then just north of there on the Indiana side, we had a serious crash with injuries. It looks like Klein Avenue southbound at Michigan Street. That's US 12 on the Indiana side that has a crash with injuries. So Northwest Indiana not off to a great start this morning. Back on the Illinois side, no issues coming in on the Ryan. I-57 and the Bishop Ford looking good. Traffic building heavily on the Stevenson and Eisenhower, but no accidents to report. Earlier crash on the Kennedy at Cumberland is all clear, but some resulting congestion from that, and that's building on the Edens as well. Only other accidents in the area are off the expressways. Cass Avenue, right off of I-55, there is a crash. Just north of there in the western burbs, it looks like there's a crash at 22nd and Butterfield. That's out in the Lombard Downers Grove area, and that's a pretty busy intersection, so avoid that if at all possible while they work to get that cleaned up. But everything else is looking good, and weather today also looking pretty good. Some sunshine before some clouds roll in. Could get a shower later on, but will be mild. A high of 73 inland, downtown a high of 69. Right now it's mostly cloudy, but some sun peeking through, and 57 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, hot today, sunny, high of 99. Right now it's clear and 74. In sports, Cubs keep rolling. They beat the Reds last night 3-1 in Cincinnati. Sox were blasted by the Indians 9-0. Diamondbacks lost to the Pirates 6-2. And the NBA draft lottery was decided. The Bulls earned the number 7 pick, so that was pretty disappointing as they had a decent shot at the top 2 or 3 pick. Suns come in at number 6, and the New Orleans Pelicans will draft number 1 overall.
Chief, they're shedding tears in New York way more than they are here.
Oh, yeah. They really had it all, you know, big designs of getting Zion with the number 1 pick and then having Kevin Durant come over as a free agent, and all of a sudden they go from being a laughingstock to being, you know, a really good, young, exciting team.
Yeah, they were going to go back to the, well, Clyde Frazier days, would be walking in with a lady on each arm and his fur coat and a whole bit, and those were the days for the Knicks, but they were the team.
Oh, yeah, in the 70s?
Yeah.
They were great, and then in the 90s they had a good run, but they just couldn't get past MJ.
Right.
But they had good teams that went to the conference finals and then went to the finals once during one of the 2 years MJ was retired.
Yeah, they had Patrick Ewing, obviously.
Yeah, Patrick Ewing, Charles Oakley, yeah. John Starks, Anthony Mason. I mean, they had some good teams. They just, I mean, MJ just ripped their hearts out.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that was.
But he did that to a lot of teams.
So what was the, when I was a Ute, what was the ethnic term for being a gapers, with looking at stuff you weren't supposed to? What would they accuse you of doing, your aunts and grandmothers?
I don't know.
You were rubbernecking. Yeah, your neck turned the wrong way. What, do you have a rubber neck? Turn it back where you're supposed to be looking.
I like that.
Yeah, that's interesting. Funny. Do we have David?
We do.
I'm here.
Hey, David, what's up, buddy? Hey, I have a lot of questions for you. Questions. As we used to say in high school, question, Mr. Whatever. how do you, when you look at charts and or volatility in options, okay? Now, when you look at, somebody had to make a call. Somebody had to make the rules. You got to have rules, right? That when you go back on options volatility, the rule, the they look at close-to-close volatility. So if you look at any historical option numbers, you're going to see that the all those numbers are based on close-to-close, going back to God knows when. And yet there are days when we were, you know, down 30 spoos, up 30 spoos, and finished unchanged, and only an nincompoop would say that day was an easy one, right? Now, in this day's stuff, it seems like it's almost going kind of the opposite to where, well, Friday we had a big move at the end of the day, but we seem to have, when people say the markets are volatile, yesterday and to a certain extent Monday, we're boring as sin. We're down 80 on Monday, and we sat between down 80 and down 82 for literally 4.5 hours. Yesterday we sat, you could have 18 naps at your desk yesterday, and we were down 62. Every time you woke up, it was 62. I mean, we're, and then all of a sudden we went the other way, and I'm sorry, 42, and then went down to, we finished, what, up 37 or something. I mean, there really isn't much going on. There's a lot close to close. There's like nothing intraday, it appears, except for Friday when we made the move on the close, when you'll see something at 2 o'clock coming out of the White House that'll turn the market maybe, or the Treasury or someplace. It's kind of really an amazing lot of close-to-close volatility with very little, I use the term, action. It's weird. I mean, am I just getting a weird, an odd sense of it?
Well, you asked about six questions.
Well, that's what I always do.
Embedded in one. Typical.
Yeah.
But beyond that, you get the opposite also, where, you know, spoos are up 30, down 30, and finish unchanged, and the volatility goes way down, and yet you know that that was a heart attack during the day.
Yeah.
So you get the opposite, too. And so the answer is something called ATR. It's average true range. And typically most technicians do it on a daily basis, which sometimes hides the fact, but it does take into account if you get a large average true range, and usually there's a moving average of a period, whether it's 10 closes or 10 30-minute bars or 15-minute bars or whatever. But most technicians use daily. So if you get large ranges, high to low, but not much, you know, in the way of daily changes, you still will be looking at, you know, high volatility, and vice versa, where if now you take a group of 40 15-minute bars or 30-minute bars, and like you said, you can take 18 naps, and the market didn't go anywhere, the average true ranges will be small, and that will affect your thinking or calculation of what you believe the real volatility is. ATR is a common tool that technicians use.
Well, what do you do with it?
A lot. I have some algorithms, you know, based on that, and you use that.
Is it tradable?
Yeah.
If it shows the last 5 days have been snorers from 9 o'clock to 2:30.
Well, then you want to sell volatility.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. What do you make of these? When I came in, the S&Ps were down 6, now they're down 1975. These retail sales numbers, if they're to be to believe, are total clunks. How can we go, I always ask this, David, and I know you're not the statistician, but I'm going to ask you anyway, now that you're here. How the hell do you go from 400,000 people being hired 1 month to 100,000 the next? So let's get this straight. For a period of 20 working days, we're hiring 20,000 people a day, and then all of a sudden the next 20 working days, we're hiring 5,000 a day. I can't believe that the break could ever be like that. Now, last month in March, we had retail sales up 1.7%, which I thought was a serious outlier. Now, this month, they're minus 2%. Are they really up 1% on average for the 2 months, and we should just look at it that way? Or was there something that happened in April that caused the change to March? But that's the part I don't know enough to whether I can say we're slowing down in April and I should do something about it, like lighten up, now Macy's had good earnings this morning. So, but then that looks back to 3 months behind too. So that the March is included in there and not April. So it's very difficult to come up with a, you know, should I buy, sell, or wherever, or head to Tahiti today. But I suspected last month's number was was inflationary. Now this month, I think is even more inflationary if it's down with the price increases that I think are there. If it's a real number without a timing problem, that's an awful April. I mean, is it that bad, or I don't know
the answer to that, and I tend to not trust those figures anyway. I mean, I think they're is erratic and uneven and based on all kinds of seasonal, you know, adjustments and then readjustments the following period and the like that I honestly don't, you would know far better than I know. And what I do know, I don't trust. I just, when you get a period like that where, you know, geez, these are clunkers, your words, and it looks like that. And then Macy's, which is the dog of the dogs, and closing up, you know, closing up stores like there's no tomorrow, and the only value is real estate. And then they come out with a number that's far above, you know, estimates in the issue, which is heavily shorted, pops up 6.6% in the pre-market. So go figure.
Yeah, it's I think that, but you know, what's weird is how come, Professor, these guys know if you and I bought a pair of nail clippers 2 months ago, yet they can't figure out what the numbers are.
Yeah, I don't know if it's, you know, old algorithms or seasonal factors to adjust the figures that themselves have been unadjusted for too long. I don't know the answer to that. What? I mean, I can somewhat explain away, you know, CPI because of the way they adjust their baskets, and I don't think, and you and I have talked for years about what is not included in the basket, so we can discount, you know, some of the numbers and believe that they're far, far higher than what they tell us. But as far as the retail sales numbers, I have no idea how
well,
they do it.
Well, I'll ask you, and we'll get our man, our new man Jack, into the fray here. If I'm going to take Visa, MasterCard, American Express, and Discover, what percentage of all retail trades, retail sales, do you think run through those four places every month? I have to believe it's 85%, 90%. Maybe 80, but it's not 10. So if you ought to be able to get those numbers, and you got to be pretty damn close. I mean, what do you think it is? Jack, what would you say? I mean, how many people pay cash? Can't be more than 15% anymore.
I really don't know, but I would assume that you're probably close. I would assume that most people, 80%, 85% use card.
I mean, I guess you maybe, I'm going to say McDonald's is probably 80% still cash. Maybe I'm wrong on that one. But Dunkin' Donuts over here isn't 80% cash anymore, I don't think.
I don't think McDonald's either, because really? They've gone so much to the kiosks, and those only accept cash.
I've never seen one of those kiosks yet. I don't go to McDonald's very much.
Oh, they're in the train station, and they're all over now.
Really?
Ugh. Yeah.
Well, I'm saying
you walk up and you make your selection and you slide in the card and you can literally see the number of, you know, people behind the cash register. I mean, the lines used to be out the door at the Metro train Union station, and now there are, you know, 2-3 people. Everyone's using the kiosk. I mean, that's just anecdotal, but I know that, you know, they, like everybody else, want to lower labor costs. So they put in a kiosk with the menu and, you know, a card taker, and that's it. No idea. I would guess that you know, it was probably 80-85% cash at McDonald's. And I'm not a big McDonald's goer, but, you know, here or there I'll stop in. And I would be willing to bet that 85% cash is probably down to 60.
Really? Well, there was a McDonald's over here where these guys were in Van Buren, and I don't know if they when they left, but it was a long time ago. They were where the Dunkin' Donuts is. But that's been almost 10 years. David, they must have had 10 people working in there trying to get a hamburger out of these people. The hamburger was like an adventure. It wasn't like they were understaffed. It was like, who are these people in here? But how do you, at the end of the day, we were talking with Kevin earlier, and actually I was on another station the other day as a guest, and they have a lot more call-ins, and as soon as they figured out that I was in the business, boy, the phones lit up and everybody was asking questions, you know, because they unfortunately don't listen to Stocks and Jacks. They should, but I think that somehow or another, Kevin, this Kevin, David, this movement in the market, and to the sense that people pay attention to it, it's coming on the heels of the interest rate being low, and people, I think it's fair to say that based on the percentages that you and I grew up with, actually, if you were to read a standard book today on portfolio and how to put somebody's portfolio together, I'm going to say if you dug anywhere in there, if you found a page and you found somebody retiring at, pick a number, retiring at 67, the dude and the wife got $1 million, it's their 401k, it's their whatever, you're going to find somewhere in the Merrill Lynch manual or everybody else, you're probably going to say 40 to 50% stock, 30% to 30 to 35% fixed income, and 20% cash somewhere along there, correct?
Right.
I mean, that's the historical, and then if you're 70, maybe it'll be 40% stock, whatever. I'm not saying 30-year bonds. It could be, 5-year bonds or whatever. That would be, and you and I, of course, since we know how to use options, we know how to do other stuff, we can make the stock side of the portfolio less risky by using, option hedging and things like that, if somebody wants us to. However, because we can adjust all that stuff. But basically, that was the, quote, portfolio. So if you had somebody who was 75 years old, normally they wouldn't walk in the door like you and I get now, where somebody's 95% in stocks. They just wouldn't be there. So even if the market were to, quote, tank, and you had 45, 50% in the market, and the market lost 20%, which, by the way, I'm not predicting, but if it did, you're really only down, quote, 10, right?
Right.
But now I think people are misallocated historically, okay? And I think that they're more concerned about the market than they ever were because of that. And I think that's right now that's a big Achilles heel. As a matter of fact, I kind of wish you were around last night. I was talking to one of my Fed buddies, and we were talking about interest rates being low. And he was, again, these guys are not policymakers or whatever, but they're real bright guys, economists. Actually go around the world and talk to people about exchanges and central banks and how they all work together for money and things. A pretty bright group. And you really got to be on your toes to talk to them. But they think the collateral damage being done with the interest rates being this low, I was kind of pontificating, and they were agreeing and taking it one step further, that the education you've given people that rates should be here, that you've totally lost track of, if I have money, I should never give it to anybody to use for free. Why should I? Money is a factor of production. Money is something that is worthwhile. And people have gotten really used to using other people's dough for free, and which is really not a message you want to give community. I mean, if you go back to the savings and loan, people paid 6% for their mortgage. You paid 3% on the passbook, and the rest of the 3% paid the people's salaries, paid the building, paid for the Little League uniforms, and nobody in one of those places made $1 zillion a year like the bank guys do now. The whole idea that we should give forever to certain people in business, not everybody, our money at 1% or 0.5% or something, and they should turn around and charge people 24% just to keep them alive, is unconscionable to me, David. And yet it's become such the part of the fabric. I don't even know if I talk to people, they don't even know what, so that banks are supposed to lend this dough. There should be a spread. They should be paying you 2.5, and they should be charging the plumber 7, say, for the new, or 7.5 for the new, if he's of good risk, the new plumbing van. This idea that they give you nothing and they charge people 24% and don't even lend to the plumber because that's not enough. This is a world that basically blows. I think it doesn't.
Well,
work.
I get what you're saying, and largely I agree with it. There's no way to disagree with it when you look at 13 central banks still with negative interest rates where you have to pay them to take your money. So I'm not, disagreeing. Although the one issue that I would take with your statement is that, especially in the last 3 to 4 to 5 months, even as, 2-year, 5-year, 10-year, even 30-year rates have come down, I don't know if it's competing for the savings or whatever, you are starting to see instruments money market, 9-month CDs, 18-month CDs, the like, whatever. But even on money market, where you have full flexibility to get your cash if you want it, a lot of, you know, domestic, obviously not foreign, but domestic banks, the Chase's, the Fifth Third Bank, you know, which I do some work with and the like, offering 2%, 2.25%. Now, it's supposed to be new money, quote-unquote new money. That said, you know, they'll have a $10,000 minimum or a $25,000 minimum, but they'll say, you know, hey, look, you have this money here. Take the money or close that account or whatever. Stay out for 2 days and then bring it in as new money, and we'll pay you the 2%, 2.25%.
Right, it's definitely...
And like you said, yeah. You know, if it's a credit card or whatever and they're charging 18 or 18 and a third or even as high as 24%, that spread is still there.
Yeah, I just... I honestly think, and I was mentioning these Fed guys last night, I like the model the way it's supposed to be. The people that have money, I mean... I don't. When you lose the logic, David. I mean, if you and I are going to go out and build a building, hey, you know, we could really use a high rise on that corner. Well, what do we need to build it? Well, gee, we need some steel. We need some concrete. We need a bunch of guys to go in there and hang doors. And oh, by the way, we need the money to build the damn place, right? And we should, if we're using other people's money to build something of value that we are going to benefit from, that money deserves return too.
Sure.
The idea that your money doesn't, but mine does. the banks that I don't see how we ever let that work its way through society, and yet it's there.
And it was there. And like I said, and what I'm seeing is a slight revision, at least domestically, in what, you know, folks are getting paid for their money.
Yeah, it's better than zero.
You know, they choose the new instruments. Internationally, no.
Right. Well, I can remember when this first happened, David, and I had a reasonable chunk of change at Harris, right? And I was in, you know, the interest checking account. And all of a sudden, I go to do my taxes. And I mean, I had, you know, I'm not going to say, let's say upper five figures. It wasn't six. And I didn't get my, what do you call it, 1099 from Harris?
Right.
And the money was in there all year. And this is ways ago. And I didn't get my 1099. I go, what the bleep? I mean, I knew it was only, you know, a minuscule amount, but I'm like, they didn't send it to me. You know, and the last thing you do when you do your taxes is not put something in there, because even if it was $50, you know, somebody's liable to come after you, because I had had it the year before. It was under $1. So they,
oh, yeah.
Evidently, if it's under $1, you don't have to send it. I didn't know that. I call them up. I go, where the hell's my 1099? I go, you made less than $1 in interest. I did what? How do you make less than $1 when you got, you know, whatever, 75 grand sitting there for a whole year? Well, yeah, it was less than $1. I'm like, why bother? Why even say there's interest? What are you doing? What's the number? 0.000?
Well, I've seen the same. I had a very small, like $5,000 piece in a money market at Chase. And had it there for 20 years and literally forgot about it. And then they came to me and they said, do you want to do something with this $5,000? We have these other instruments. I said, well, what's it up to now? And it was $5,005.
I'm surprised they didn't hit you up with a $6,000 minimum and start charging $15 a month or something.
It was literally earned $5 on $5,000 and like, no exaggeration, like 15 or 20 years.
All right, Dave, we got S&P is now down 18. We got these retail numbers that were lousy. Again, but they nudged the last month up a little bit. So you got 30 seconds. Where is there a buy point here? Is there a sell point?
Yeah, buy the S&P at 28. And, you know, if I wouldn't risk much, 4, 5, 6 handles. And then if it fails, I'd start selling rallies. And upside, you know, anything certainly near 2860, 2870 is a sell for now.
Are we going to start a little bit? Are we in a holding pattern until the Japanese meeting? I think we might be a little bit on that stuff.
Yeah, I think it'll be intraday volatility, not much volatility on a closing basis, And I think the market will be range-bound for the next several weeks till they see the next, you know, G20 meeting.
David, thank you very much for summing in today, buddy. Good job, Jack. SP Futures down 1850. NASDAQ Futures down 50. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.